Here's Andy Udman.
Good morning, London. 9 minutes after 10 o'clock on this very warm Thursday, June the 21st. If you are at a stoplight in London right now, have a look. Okay. Now have a look at the other corner. You probably have a jogger, and you're thinking, holy mackerel, I can barely walk in this weather. Why are they out there? It's 26 degrees already. We're going for another record high for the third day in a row, and they're jogging. And there they are. You know what they do at the corners, of course. They keep jogging. They stand in one position and keep jogging, and then they'll look at their watch. Oh, my goodness, I'm 10 seconds behind. I'm not mocking these runners. In fact, there's a part of me that says they got a lot more willpower than I do. Well, Pam Colleen is in the house this morning to say maybe they're not doing themselves a favor. Is that what you're saying, Pam?
That's right, because our adrenal glands, which are our batteries for the body, are not designed for long stretches of strenuous exercise. Our adrenals may be designed to do strenuous activity for 2 to 3 minutes at a time. And in terms of our evolution, that was because we were trying to avoid getting eaten or to eat. So doing strenuous exercise for 15, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, an hour is actually very counterproductive to your overall health.
I have a friend who's been in the Boston Marathon 17 times.
Mm-hmm.
He looks like he's in pretty good shape to me.
Well, I think we should talk to our guest this morning about that. Because Randy Roach, who is the author of Muscle, Smoke, and Mirrors, is a fitness instructor and a fitness historian. And Randy, what have you discovered in terms of exercise habits over the years?
First of all, let me say hello, Randy. How are you? It's good to have you back.
Hi, Andy. Thanks for having me back.
Just a quick word about your title, Muscle, Smoke, and Mirrors. I like the title.
Yeah, volume two, actually. Volume one and two. Just two came out in November.
Okay, Pam, your question.
Right. I just wanted to touch base with Randy on this issue of strenuous exercise. I know, Randy, you don't do jogging or running on treadmills, and you don't advocate for that with your clients. And that's really going against a lot of the belief systems in the fitness industry today.
Yeah, it's cardio. We become cardio crazy in the past 35 years, and there's reasons for why that happened. But the problem in today with exercise, in my opinion, people overtrain, whether it's just aerobics or anaerobic, even weight training or cardio, they drastically overtrain. We're finding a lot of the runners from the 70s and the early 80s, with the amount of running they were doing, plus the type of diet they were eating, they have all sorts of cardiac issues today. Not necessarily arteriosclerosis, but other issues, arrhythmia issues and stuff from a massive amount of overexercise and probably undernutrition.
There are some people out there right now going, oh, goody, this afternoon I can stay on the couch. I can watch Oprah and eat all those chips.
Well, the problem is they think exercise fixes everything, and there were a number of prominent bodybuilders in the past who said exercise is actually second, nutrition is first. And you can exercise all you want, but if your nutrition is wrong and bad for your body, you're going to get sick or you're going to die. There are several runners who have been found with heart attacks on the side of the road, you know, at a young age, because they didn't care what they ate, because they thought they could just run their issues away, and that is not the case.
So you're not saying, I want to be clear what you're not saying, exercise is bad.
No, I say that too much emphasis is put on excessive exercise. People are crunching all these numbers, wearing all these monitors and watches, and going, and the amount of training they're doing, they're just running themselves into the ground. And like Pam said, the adrenal glands take a beating.
Randy, let me go back to Pam on this one, because Pam is an avid tennis player. Every time I talk to her, she's either just come from a tennis game or going to one.
Right.
And yet you say you question strenuous exercise.
Strenuous. I'm doing anaerobic exercise. So tennis is stopping and starting. Whereas what I'm saying is risky is this strenuous exercise, that where you're going for 10, 20, 30, 40 minutes. And that's really hard on the body. That's not how our bodies were designed at all. It's overtaxing our adrenal glands and causing a lot of potential health problems.
And yet my sister lives in Penticton, BC, and she's always talking about the Ironman. You think a 26-mile run is tough. Mm-hmm. Oh, you know, the Ironman with the swimming and the biking on top of the running. And you're saying it's not...
No, exercise like that is acting on the adrenal glands in a similar fashion to other stimulants like caffeine or cocaine. And so essentially what you're doing in the long run is what you're trying to do is turn on weakened adrenal glands. And then over time, what you're doing is just draining the adrenals. And so you have to keep going back to the substance or to the strenuous activity just to turn on those adrenal glands. And so when you're not exercising, you feel lousy because it's the exercise that's the stimulant for certain individuals. And so it's really not healing the adrenals. It's actually suppressing the functioning of the adrenal glands.
We're in conversation with the author of the book Muscle, Smoke, and Mirrors, Randy Roach. Randy, what is the biggest misunderstanding, in your opinion, in the bodybuilding and fitness industries?
Biggest misunderstanding?
Yes.
That it still lingers somewhat today, but I think it's less than it was, say, in the early 90s, is that the fats are something you got to avoid for weight loss and for health. It's not just the health reasons that you avoid. They all affiliate dietary fat with body fat, and that's... Not the situation. Just to go back a little bit with what Pam was saying, the epitome of this exercise with these Ironman competitions that go on for hours. I remember on TV, even it was aired several years ago. One of the competitors, this female competitor, she was in this triathlon, was running, jogging, and biking, jogging, and swimming. She was so delirious that she was staggering all over the road. She had lost bladder and she lost bowel control. And the announcers were kind of trying to cover this and say, okay, you know, trying to explain this away. But, you know, some of these people are taken away in ambulances, right? So, I mean, this is not healthy. This mm-hmm. is not what exercise, even this is like all this bodybuilding and physical fitness came out of what's called physical culture 100 years ago. It was a certain moderate amount of exercise with fresh air and proper eating.
My son ran in the Toronto Marathon a couple of years ago, and as we got in the car after the marathon, we turned on the radio, and the first thing we heard, it was a newscast, and I don't remember what the story was when we turned it on, but the second story was, in fact, I think they started with a traffic report, and then they said a runner has died in the Toronto Marathon, and he was 26 mm-hmm. years old, and he was running the half marathon, not the full marathon. And yet, Randy, people would respond to that and say, yeah, but Andy, there were 25,000 people who ran and one guy dies and you're going to focus on that?
Yeah, but I've talked to a lot of elite athletes over the years and I can tell you, and I can test their biochemistry and all I see is a lot of problems, a lot of health problems from all that strenuous activity and poor diet as well.
The human body is very resilient, so people can get, because they get away with it. Some can get away with it for several decades, where some cannot. This can only last a couple of years, but that's basically what they're doing. They're getting away with it, but it does catch up with them. You know, a lot of them, as a bodybuilder, I have to admit, a lot of the older guys, they're crippled up with a lot of things. Mm-hmm. And excessive training, excessive weight, and stuff. Like, exercise is a double-edged sword.
Well, I want to ask you about a chap that most people would recognize his name, and that is Arnold Schwarzenegger. And I don't want to talk about his family life. How is the family, Arnold? I want to talk about what did he know about nutrition? We'll be back on that in just a moment right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.
The bodybuilding industry is the foundation for the fitness industry today. So there's a big link between the two, and I think we need to pay attention to the history of the bodybuilders as they were in the early part of the 1900s. Back then, they knew about the naturalness of bodybuilding. Back then, they didn't have access to steroids or protein powders. They knew about real nutrition 100 years ago, but it seems that wisdom is lost today.
21 minutes now after 10 o'clock, I said to Pam Colleen before we started the show, Pam, remember, I don't suspect there are a whole lot of bodybuilders in our audience, so how does this relate to the general audience? She said, well, there's a lot of people in fitness clubs. Let me ask you about all the people in fitness clubs, because fitness is so huge today, and yet you're saying there's a basic premise there that is off the mark.
The fitness industry, where I see a lot going wrong, is that people are just draining their batteries. They're draining their adrenal glands too much, and they're causing all sorts of internal stress in their bodies. And by doing the strenuous exercise, what they're doing is they're producing too much cortisol in the body, and cortisol is an aging hormone. It's essentially when you're producing too much of it, it's very destructive to the body. And so when you're producing too much cortisol, it's telling the body that you're under stress. And so what happens with these individuals is they end up with a lot of fatigue, a lot of depression, anxiety, sleep disorders, and so on. And so really what you want to do with the human body is you need to be in a parasympathetic mode, which is in a state of resting and digesting. That's a normal, natural, healthy state.
Okay, let me just process that, because I'm really having trouble making that work in my mind. I think of my friend in Aylmer, I've had him on the air a couple of times. He's 92. Every Wednesday afternoon, he drives into London and goes to the velodrome at the old Treasure Island Gardens and rides a bike for an hour at about 40 miles an hour. Back in the 30s, he was going to the New York State Fair on his bicycle from Toronto. Now, maybe you wouldn't put long-distance biking in the category of strenuous exercise.
No, it would be. But again, like Randy was mentioning earlier, there are some people who can handle some strenuous exercise. What I see happening is this perfect storm where people have very weak biochemistries, and then they go out and drain their batteries that much more by doing excessive exercise. What I'm talking about is based on the work of Dr. Hans Selye, and he was the world-renowned endocrinologist, researcher out of McGill University, who basically looked in the history of exercise of mankind and basically said that our adrenals are simply not designed for push, for more than 2 to 3 minutes at a time. We're really not supposed to be doing all this strenuous exercise, but because of a burgeoning industry that's pushing for us to ride bicycles or jog on treadmills or go out jogging, you know, it's being promoted as something healthy. And quite honestly, when I see people who show up on my doorstep who are doing all this strenuous exercise, I don't see very healthy individuals. In fact, I won't work with people who are doing strenuous exercise because I know I'm going to have a real tough time getting them well.
Boy, that there goes another sacred cow. Randy, let me ask you to comment on what you just heard from Pam.
One of the big issues is our culture today is different than it was 50, 60 years ago. I would contend in many cases the people of the 1950s and such were probably far less contaminated, but not totally. One of the nutritional pioneers in nutrition, his name was Irvin Johnson. He was out of Chicago. He changed his name to Rio H. Blair. He used the analogy of the carnivore animals, like lions, where basically they laid around all day and they'd get up and they'd probably do about a few minute sprints, a high intensity exercise, and that was all she wrote. And say, if you watch dogs, dogs will lay around most of the day, but they'll go for a run. Even if you have little house dogs, I have a gym in my basement. Some of my friends have these little dogs. They'll bring them down. They're usually in the house all the time. They'll go down to my gym, and they'll all of a sudden go into this crazy sprint around my gym. It's hilarious. And they'll go around about five times, then that's it. Mm-hmm. And their owners are going, what's wrong with it? I said, he just knows he needs exercise. Mm-hmm. And it's time for him to do his sprints, and then he goes, and that's it for the day. But, I mean, people look at our bodies are pretty, like I said, they're pretty resilient. And people can exercise, and people can ride bikes, and, you know, that stuff. The aerobic type activity is not as strenuous as compared to, say, high-intensity weight training or stop and start sprinting. So a well-healthy conditioned person can get on a bike and go for a cruise probably on a daily basis if he wants to. It's when he starts doing he's sprinting the hills, and they think they're going longer and longer and longer till they get in these marathon events. That's when they start punching the adrenal glands. And Rio H. Blair, back in the 50s, also was very concerned about the state of the adrenal glands.
Mm-hmm. Now, going back in history, Randy, because you really are an authority on the history of the fitness industry, what are the most prominent changes that you've seen happen? And you can talk about Volume 1 and how it merges into Volume 2, perhaps.
Yeah, the difference of those two volumes is the sheer scope. The first volume spanned over 200 years, primarily the first 70 years of the 20th century, and how bodybuilding arose out of physical culture and in a Western culture that was very non-compliant with strenuous exercise. Volume 2 is mostly in the 1970s because there was a great big attitude change towards exercise, and the fitness boom began to launch in the 1970s for a number of factors. But in the early 20th century, specifically strenuous activity, there was actually physical culture was actually kind of been known as another name for sport. But I mean, Oxford had a different definition of I think the sum total of a society's attitudes and activities towards learning and exercise. So, you know, you have certain, back at that time, you had distinct cultures all around the world, Indian, China, you know, American, where they had the same similar religious belief throughout the country, similar specialized sports and learning practices that they all put that under physical culture. But as the 20th century progressed, I kind of tweaked that definition to say the sum total of a person's attitudes and activities towards learning and exercise, because all these cultures got blended. But exercise was moderate, and again, academia was going under changes, especially in the medical field, where they became very hostile towards strenuous exercise. That's why muscle bound and muscle binding came in. And we progressed that way for most of through the 20th century until even the 19th, the rise of heart disease. The rise of heart disease had people, scratching their heads. What's going on here? Most people were oblivious what was going on behind the scenes in nutrition and the manipulation of our food supply. But they started to wonder, can exercise prevent this rise in heart disease? And again, it wasn't bodybuilding exercises or weight strength resistance exercises they were looking to. It was more towards aerobic and jogging. And Kenneth Cooper's book, Aerobics, in 1968, and his follow-up book, 1970, this created a great big boom of, we can prevent this. We can prevent this heart disease by doing this aerobic style, slow, steady state running. And
Randy, let me jump in. Pam was, because we're coming down to the bottom of the hour, we have to take a short break. Pam was just saying that she finds that a lot of people who are into strenuous exercise, their health is terrible. Why is that?
Pam is also has a certain group of people she's working with who are sick, right? Like the exercise hasn't helped them. It's absolutely made them worse. But not everybody, obviously, is exercise. Again, the early pioneers of bodybuilding and physical culture thought it increased their organic efficiency and it stimulated the body. But again, and that's probably true. I believe it to be true. But at what point do you cross over stimulating the body and now taxing the body? A lot of the pioneers like Arthur Jones, Vince Gironda were very astute to this. These guys are doing way too much. They're in the gym training for 3-4 hours.
Randy, let me jump in because we have to break. What would you say, just a guess, what would you say is the average age of death of people who compete regularly in the Ironman? How long do they live?
I would say probably into their 70s, 60s or 70s.
Okay. Yeah.
So what's the point? They don't live as long as the rest of us?
That's has been my point for years, that I don't think we're seeing this great longevity with exercise. Nutrition is more important.
Okay, nutrition more important than exercise, and strenuous exercise, Pam,
can be very counterproductive, no question about it.
Okay, now, Pam, you have to scoot.
Mm-hmm.
You have another thing, another commitment that you have to go to, so thank you for getting this discussion started, and we'll be back with Randy Roach on the other side. We'll keep the phone lines open, 643-1290. Randy Roach, the author of the book Muscle, Smoke, and Mirrors. When we come back in just a moment here in London today on News Talk 1290 CJBK. You gotta love a guy who would have the guts to tangle with Arnold Schwarzenegger. his wife did, but that's another whole story. Randy Roach is the author of the book Muscle, Smoke, and Mirrors. Pam Colleen joins us as she does every Thursday, but she's had to scoot for the second half hour, so we're flying solo. Randy, let me ask you about Arnold Schwarzenegger. How's Arnold doing these days, by the way?
He was just down at Gold's Gym in Venice because everybody down there is afraid that Google is moving in and they're going to displace Gold's Gym that's been there for, in that location there, probably over 30 years, but it originated in Venice Beach. So he was down there making comments that Gold's is going to be fine and all that stuff. So he was thrown under the bus for a while there last year, wasn't he? But he's
He had some domestic issues, shall we say.
Yeah, but he always seems to land on his feet, and he's probably going to be back in the Hollywood scene again, so he's got the money. Maria doesn't take it all on him.
Well, he was a bad boy, but let's talk about Arnold Schwarzenegger, the bodybuilder. What does he know about nutrition? Because that's what you're so big on, nutrition, that people in the bodybuilding and fitness industry don't know anything about nutrition, or what they do know, they got it all wrong. What was Arnold's theory? Does he know anything about nutrition?
Yeah, they didn't have it all wrong. I think they flipped it all wrong after the 1980s. They got things flipped. But Arnold knew the standard bodybuilding fare of his day. He came from Austria and Germany, where a lot of his original diet was pretty whole natural foods and then probably raw milk and meat stuff. But he took a fair amount of steroids in that early stage as well. But when he came to America in 68, he spent a lot of time on the West Coast with the guys who were more astute to bodybuilding nutrition and at least cutting out carbohydrates. And they weren't afraid of fats at the time, but they got into more specialized supplementation, some that they very much believed in, some was probably questionable. But what I did respect the fact that Arnold, in 1985, when he wrote his second book, that was a very difficult time to write on bodybuilding nutrition because of the politics had changed and everything had become taboo in terms of fat intake and cholesterol intake. And Arnold, he did what he only could do. He said, look, here's what they're saying today, but here's what I did. He ate the standard, six meals a day, a lot of, sometimes up to 3 pounds of meat in a day, a lot of cream, a lot of, and he uses protein powders. It was the standard bodybuilding diet to put on size. But again, Arnold was a steroid-using bodybuilder. But in the 80s, and that he started to change it to some degree to reflect the political change in tide. But he wasn't known as one of the top nutrition guys in bodybuilding, but he knew what was going on. He knew what he needed to do in order to compete where he did. But he did an interview with We Magazine in 1977 where he basically said he's not in bodybuilding for his health. Arnold was there for a good time too, and he looked at bodybuilding more as a sport than a vehicle for good health, at least in those early days. But his tune changed some degree as he got.
Randy, I wonder if we can change the focus just a wee bit. You've given us the history of bodybuilding in terms of their attitudes towards nutrition. We don't have a lot of bodybuilders in our audience, but we have a lot of people who are into fitness because fitness is cool, fitness is hot, fitness is health, we think. Let's go to any of the mini gyms that we have in this city and in cities all across Canada and North America. What basic beliefs are they working on that you would challenge?
First, I would contend that all the gyms around are filled with bodybuilders, just not competitive. You asked about Arnold. He was a competitive bodybuilder. He's still a bodybuilder. He's not competitive. Anybody lifting weights to change their body really is, in this essence, a bodybuilder. What I don't like what's going on today is there's a lot of these training routines are getting away from the traditional orthodox way of building muscle. And that's basically what people want to do. They want to look better and feel better. And the only way you can look better is to change your body, is to alter the muscle. And in a natural way, it's going to look good. But they're moving to these insanity routines where they're just going crazy with the CrossFit. Some of the stuff is dangerous and the way they perform the techniques.
Like what? Some of the stuff is dangerous. Like what?
They're doing Olympic, what are called Olympic lifts. In what are called ballistic movements, where it seems like where in bodybuilding you would take momentum out of the lift, you would put all the stress on the muscles and not the joints, where a lot of the people today are doing conducting exercise in a fashion that so much stress and force is being put on the joints by doing ballistic. They catapult themselves into situations. The move is called plyometrics, where they're so stuff done in a reasonable manner is okay, but a lot of these guys, it gets crazy.
But what gyms are you talking about? Because the gyms that I see, and I don't hang out in the gyms a whole lot, too busy preparing for this talk show, but if you're looking at gyms here in London, I mean, they're running, they're doing aerobics, they're swimming, they're on bikes, treadmills. I don't see the kind of sort of extreme workouts that you're talking about.
Oh yeah, they're growing. It's the fastest growing style of training in North America right now. They have their own specialized gyms that they're starting because they're flipping tractor tires and stuff like that. So, and a number of the gyms in the States are making room for this. I was just talking to one of my friends down in Florida saying they're moving out to some of the old equipment and bringing in more of this CrossFit style training. But
sorry, what was the word? What was the word, Randy?
In terms of excessive aerobics, like they got P90Xs and too bad. There's other ones called Insanity where they're just running themselves into the ground. And that type of thing is what PAMSA leads to, the adrenal stress. Look, it's not rocket science. You don't have to do a lot of this fancy stuff. Again, it's a very commercialized industry, right? Everybody wants gimmicks because the gimmicks sell. But you can get what you want through very moderate style exercise and resistance training, which is bodybuilding and proper nutrition.
But Randy, are you talking about the typical gym in the city of London? What you're talking about is foreign to me. Flipping tractor tires and some of these excessive extreme workouts. That's not the typical gym in Canada.
No, like you're saying, I don't circulate in the gyms in London and even down here in the Kitchener or Waterloo, because I know some of the owners who don't want to go that route. So the specialized gyms are, more and more gyms of that ilk are opening up. But again, with today, I would say still too much emphasis is put on cardio. If that, to answer your question specifically to the picture you have in your mind of the gym, I would say too much cardio.
Okay. In what form?
Any form. It's just not necessary. It's a myth that they got to get that heart rate down to the numbers game. I have to have my pulse rate here. I have to have my VO2 here. Does it, like you asked earlier, does it increase your longevity? Possibly not if it's done excessively. I tell people, look, if you're not feeling really well and if you're feeling sick and you now are going to add more exercise but not change your diet. Obviously, your lifestyle wasn't good enough to keep you healthy, and you're going to add excessive exercise on top of it without changing your diet. You potentially are going to exasperate the situation.
Okay, you made an interesting comment earlier. The key in your mind is, where is the line between a good, healthy, productive workout? Where do you cross the line and you start damaging your body?
That's going to probably be even on an individual basis. I tell people, look at it this way. If you have a workout day and in your mind you're saying, oh, I have to go train today, you're probably starting to cross that line. Because psychologically now, your body, for some reason, psychologically doesn't want to go there because it's probably responding to something physical. That if you have to, and people will force themselves to do it because it can become addictive. And they have to listen to their body. Even with nutrition, the person has to learn to listen to their body and know when enough is enough. And you have to get rest, and rest is important. Exercise is important. It does stimulate the body. The old saying, use it or lose it, is true. But we put so much emphasis on it that we're just... a lot of people are exercising properly, and not overtraining, but... there are a lot of fanatics who are just crazy in terms of hours and hours a week. In terms of, like I said, even back in the bodybuilding days, some of those guys are in that gym 4 hours a day lifting pretty heavy weights.
Randy, I really appreciate you joining us today. If people want to check out your website, can you give it to us?
It's www.randyroach.ca.
There we go, randyroach.ca. And his book is called Muscle, Smoke, and Mirrors. Randy, I appreciate you joining us this morning.
Thank you, Andy.
Thank you so much. Short break. When we come back, a case in Texas I want to talk to you about.